I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
And when people who espouse white supremacist, anti-Semitic, and bigoted views pick up weapons and use them to kill or to try to kill people because of their faith, our office and our partners in law enforcement will hold them accountable to the fullest extent of the law each and every time.
A federal jury has sentenced to death the gunman who killed 11 worshippers at Pittsburgh's Tree of Life Synagogue in the deadliest act of anti-Semitism in U.S. history. We'll speak to cantor Michael Zusman, co-founder of L'Chaim, Jews Against the Death Penalty. Then we'll talk to the head of the Center for Countering Digital Hate, which was sued by Elon Musk after the group documented the rise in hate speech on Twitter, now called X, after Musk bought the platform. And then the ACLU of Colorado sued the FBI and the Colorado Springs Police Department for illegally spying on a local activist and a community organizing hub, which was infiltrated by the FBI.
If you look at the history of prosecutions in the post 9/11 era, these types of tactics are used far more against left-wing activists and left-wing political groups than they are against right-wing groups.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Authorities have erected metal barricades around the federal courthouse in Washington, D.C., ahead of former President Donald Trump's arraignment today on charges he plotted to overturn his 2020 election defeat. Meanwhile, Special Counsel Jack Smith, who's leading federal investigations into Trump, has requested a hearing with a federal judge in Miami to determine whether a lawyer representing Trump's co-defendant in the classified documents case has a conflict of interest. Federal prosecutors are questioning whether the attorney, Stanley Woodward Jr., can continue to represent Trump's body man, Walt Nauta, while simultaneously representing three witnesses who might be called to testify against Nauta. In Pennsylvania, a federal jury has unanimously sentenced the gunman who killed 11 worshippers at Pittsburgh's Tree of Life Synagogue to death. Robert Bowers was found guilty of federal hate crimes for the 2018 massacre. Many survivors and family members gathered to express their relief over the death sentence. But Rabbi Jonathan Perlman, who helped hide worshippers during the gunman's rampage, wrote in the Jewish American newspaper The Forward, quote, "Vengeance has become a motivating factor for many Jews who hope the jury would sentence the murderer to death. But despite the horrific nature of his crimes, I do not believe that doing so would bring either justice or peace," the rabbi wrote. We'll have more on the story after headlines, speaking with a cantor. In Memphis, Tennessee, prosecutors have filed attempted murder charges against a man who fired shots outside the Margolin Hebrew Academy school Monday after he tried and failed to enter the building. The gunman left the premises, but police officers later found Joel Alejandro Bowman after identifying his car. They confronted him and shot him, sending him to hospital in critical condition. Memphis Police Chief C.J. Davis says officers averted a potential mass shooting. Iran's government ordered a two-day nationwide shutdown amidst an unprecedented heat wave. Iran's state news agency reports about 1,000 people have been hospitalized for heat-related ailments in recent days as temperatures in some cities soared to 50 degrees Celsius or 123 degrees Fahrenheit. In northern China, the death toll from unrelenting rainfall has risen to 20, with more than 1 million residents of Beijing and other cities forced to evacuate, flooding that left widespread damage. Beijing saw more than 29 inches of precipitation between Saturday and Wednesday morning, its heaviest rainfall in at least 140 years. In Japan, The Tokyo Medical Examiner's Office says 73 people died last month of heat-related illnesses, while in South Korea, the government reports at least 23 heat-related deaths since May. This week, hundreds of participants at the 25th World Scout Jamboree have fallen ill from heat exhaustion, with some 400 cases reported on Tuesday evening alone. Meanwhile, South America is experiencing one of the most extreme weather events on record, with temperatures in parts of Chile and Argentina topping 100 degrees Fahrenheit in the dead of winter. Raul Cordero, a climatologist from the University of Santiago, says the unprecedented winter heat could threaten water supplies to major cities in the months ahead.
One of the problems of high temperatures during winter is that they quickly melt seasonal snow. In countries like Chile, the provision of water during the dry season, spring and summer, relies on the natural storage that's in the mountain snowpack. It's a natural reservoir that provides water to communities and big cities in central Chile.
A new report by Climate Central finds global heating made the month of July hotter for more than 80% of humanity, more than 6.5 billion people. In Niger, the leader of the military junta that deposed President Mohamed Bazoum on July 26 says he'll defy any attempts to restore the former president by force as leaders of the ECOWAS bloc of West African countries threaten military action unless the coup is reversed by August 6. General Abdurrahman Tchiani made the comments in a nationally televised address Wednesday.
The National Council for Safeguarding the Homeland rejects all sanctions and refuses to yield to any threat, wherever it may come from. We reject any interference in Niger's internal affairs.
Major cities across Niger have been experiencing rolling blackouts after Nigeria cut supplies of electricity as part of sanctions imposed on Niger. This week, French soldiers evacuated hundreds of French nationals and other Europeans from Niger. And on Wednesday, the U.S. State Department ordered the evacuation of non-emergency personnel and family members from its embassy in Niger's capital, Niamey. The Biden administration told CNN it has no plans to withdraw some 1,100 U.S. troops in Niger. In Tunisia, President Kais Saied has dismissed the prime minister, appointing former central bank executive Ahmed Al-Hashani as a replacement. He faces a spiraling economic crisis and public anger over President Saied's policies and what has been deemed an executive coup. Many Tunisian citizens expressed indifference at the sudden change in leadership.
I no longer pay much attention to the change of ministers. Every 4 or 5 months, you hear about a new minister and an outgoing minister, and their appointments announced on a Facebook page.
In Brazil, at least 45 people have been killed in police raids targeting gangs over the past week in Sao Paulo State. Police killed 16 people during a 5-day raid in what appears to be retaliation following the fatal shooting of an officer. Protesters took to the streets after the deadly raid in the coastal city of Guarujá.
We want to tell our public servant, Governor Tarcísio de Freitas, that he is violating our Constitution. The fifth article, which is about the right to life, the inviolable right to housing, is being broken into. We want to tell our public servant that we do not accept paying for the bullet that kills our children.
Sao Paulo's right-wing Governor Tarcísio de Freitas is a close ally of the former President Jair Bolsonaro and has been cast as a likely contender to run for the presidency after Bolsonaro was barred from holding office until 2030. Mexican authorities say they're working to identify a body found trapped in the floating barrier of buoys installed by Texas in the Rio Grande. The U.S. Justice Department has sued Texas over Governor Greg Abbott's floating barrier, while Mexico says it violates a water treaty and could encroach on its territory. This comes as the Houston Chronicle reports Texas troopers have been separating migrant families who enter the U.S. by detaining and separating fathers on trespassing charges in an apparent violation of guidelines issued in 2021. Meanwhile, a new report by two advocacy groups reveals workers at the Department of Homeland Security regularly abuse migrants at the U.S.-Mexico border with impunity, citing, quote, the misuse of lethal force, intimidation, sexual harassment, and falsifying documents, unquote. The Fitch Ratings credit rating agency has downgraded the U.S. government's long-term debt from AAA status to the lesser AA-plus rating. The move could make it harder for the Treasury to attract investors in U.S. government bonds. On Wednesday, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen blasted the decision as entirely unwarranted.
At the end of the day, Fitch's decision does not change what all of us already know, the Treasury securities remain the world's preeminent safe and liquid asset, and that the American economy is fundamentally strong.
In downgrading the U.S. credit rating, Fitch analysts cited a, quote, steady deterioration in standards of governance over the last 20 years, unquote. This follows drawn-out negotiations between the White House and Republican leaders over the debt ceiling, which narrowly averted a default on the nation's debt in June. And Pope Francis met Wednesday with survivors of sexual abuse by clergy during a trip to Lisbon, Portugal. The visit comes in the wake of a report which found priests and other church officials in Portugal likely abused 5,000 children or more since 1950. Pope Francis also called out Portugal's Catholic leaders for their inaction and dismissal of the survivors and said the church needed purification from a string of child abuse scandals.
They call for a humble and constant purification, starting from the cry of pain of the victims, always to welcome and listen.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Nermeen Sheikh. Hi, Nermeen.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
The man who carried out the deadliest attack on Jews in U.S. history has been sentenced to death by a federal jury. On Wednesday, jurors unanimously sentenced Robert Bowers to death for killing 11 worshipers at Pittsburgh's Tree of Life Synagogue. Bowers was found guilty of federal hate crimes for the 2018 massacre. The worshipers had gathered on a Saturday morning for Shabbat services when Bowers entered the synagogue armed with an AR-15 and three handguns. He yelled, "All Jews must die," as he opened fire. When he was finally taken into custody 20 minutes later, he reportedly told a SWAT team officer he, quote, wanted all Jews to die. Before the attack, Bowers posted a link on social media to the website of Hayas, a Jewish nonprofit that was planning a Shabbat ceremony for refugees across the country. He wrote, quote, "Why, hello there, Hayas. You like to bring in hostile invaders to dwell among us?" Then hours before his attack on the Tree of Life Synagogue, he posted, quote, "Hayas likes to bring invaders in that kill our people. I can't sit by and watch my people get slaughtered. Screw your optics. I'm going in," he said. This death penalty sentence for Bowers is the first for federal prosecutors in the Biden administration, which has imposed a moratorium on executions. This is U.S. Attorney Eric Olshan.
The evidence in this trial proved that the defendant acted because of white supremacist, anti-Semitic, and bigoted views that unfortunately are not original or unique to him. Sadly, they are too common. Our Constitution protects a person's right to hold repugnant beliefs. But our Constitution also protects every person's right to practice his or her faith. And when people who espouse white supremacist, anti-Semitic, and bigoted views pick up weapons and use them to kill or to try to kill people because of their faith, our office and our partners in law enforcement will hold them accountable to the fullest extent of the law, each and every time.
Today, the families of victims in the Pittsburgh synagogue mass shooting are sharing their impact statements before Bowers is formally sentenced to death. On Wednesday, victims' family members and survivors of the shooting responded to the jury's decision.
And for the final verdict in this case, I feel relief. And the jury sat through months of horror and delivered justice to my mom and everyone that was killed and everyone injured and everyone beyond.
Finally, justice has been served. And even though nothing will bring my dad back, I feel like a weight has been lifted and I can breathe a sigh of relief.
This trial is important in enforcing the law of the land. It is also important in sending a signal in the strongest possible terms that anti-Semitism and hate have no place in our hearts, no place in our communities, no place in our country, and will not be tolerated.
Rabbi Jonathan Perlman, who helped hide worshipers during the gunman's rampage, wrote an op-ed in the Forward headlined, killing the shooter won't bring my slain congregants back. The rabbi writes, quote, vengeance has become a motivating factor for many Jews who hoped the jury would sentence the murderer to death. But despite the horrific nature of his crimes, I do not believe that doing so would bring either justice or peace, the rabbi wrote. Robert Bowers would have been sentenced to life in prison without parole if the jury's decision was not unanimous. In death penalty trials, potential jurors must confirm to prosecutors that they're willing to impose the death penalty as part of a jury selection process called death qualification. For more, we're joined by Cantor Michael Zusman, a former prison chaplain and co-founder of L'Chaim, Jews Against the Death Penalty. Cantor, welcome to Democracy Now! It's so important to have you with us today. If you could start off by responding to what we heard in the televised media yesterday, family member after family member expressing their grief, but also their relief at the unanimous decision to sentence Bowers, the murderer, to death.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on, and I'm sorry it's in these circumstances. First and foremost, let it be known that there is no judgment. I work as a hospital chaplain and a hospice chaplain with people who are dying and their family members. And as I tell the family members, they can and should feel however they feel as they process the grief. Far be it from me to ever know the pain that they must be going through. No one should ever experience that pain. And if it were me experiencing that pain, I indeed might be before you advocating for a death penalty. As it is, I am not. I am part of our society. And I am of the belief, as are the thousands of members of our group, L'Chaim, Jews Against the Death Penalty, that it is the law that is wrong. Indeed, a heinous crime, the likes of which was committed in Pittsburgh, should be punished to the full extent of the law. But the law is wrong. We know that the death penalty condemns the society that enacts it infinitely more than any human being that it condemns to death. And I know that from personal experience and from the experience of my people.
Could you elaborate, Cantor, on what you mean by that, that you know that from your personal experience and also the experience of your people?
Certainly. Well, it was something that I learned throughout my life, but the main experience was my experience as a prison chaplain. Working in Canada as a prison chaplain where the death penalty was not on the books, and meeting and getting to know individuals who would have qualified for the death penalty in other states in the United States and perhaps federally, and seeing how they changed. Experiencing that began to change my heart from someone who, growing up, believed in the death penalty to thinking again about it. And then when I came to learn more about it, and to see how hard the Jewish tradition made it to enact the death penalty, and to see how horrifically applied it is in a racist and fundamentally unjust manner, I began to see how wrong it was. But it wasn't until I started corresponding with people regularly over letter and nowadays over email daily with people in line for execution that I witnessed firsthand the psychological torture that's inherent in any death penalty. Physical torture often, yes. I've had many experiences with pen pals who have undergone that. But psychological torture always, including the extent of sane, otherwise sane individuals who have tried to kill themselves as the days and weeks counted down. It is something that no society should ever be a part of. That's my personal experience. I can also speak to it from the experience of my people as I see it. When it comes to that, I look to Elie Wiesel, famous Holocaust survivor and death penalty abolitionist, who said famously that death should be never the answer in a civilized society. And individuals like him, Martin Buber, Gershom Scholem, Jewish scholars, knew that even someone like Adolf Eichmann, the Nazi perpetrator, should not have been executed by Israel. Martin Buber famously called it the great mistake. When I consider the method that Robert Bowers will now be put to death, it's even more clear-cut. Lethal injection was first implemented in our world by the Nazis as part of Achtung T4. That is the protocol used to kill people deemed unworthy of life. The protocol was devised by Dr. Karl Brandt, the personal physician of Adolf Hitler. Every use of lethal injection carries on that Nazi legacy. The members of L'Chaim, Jews Against the Death Penalty, know this viscerally. Many of us, like myself, are direct scions of Holocaust survivors. We know that the death penalty is not the same as the unparalleled conflagration that was the Shoah. However, we also know that for never again to have any meaning, it must also mean never again to state-sponsored murder of defenseless prisoners who are otherwise no longer a threat, safely behind bars. This is a lesson that 21st century Judaism should share with the world. Traditional Judaism does have a place for the death penalty, albeit with prodigious safeguards to prevent anyone who is innocent from being executed. And they almost made it impossible to carry out an execution. Famously, they say that once in 70 years, if a court were to put somebody to death, that would be a hanging court. There is then a retort saying, but what about increasing the number of murderers in Israel if you were to do that, implying the notion of deterrence? We can forgive the ancient rabbis of blessed memory for not knowing that deterrence is a fallacy. It is disproven time and again by meta-studies. And so there is no reason for this excessive violence which carries on this Nazi legacy. And let me add one more thing. In various states now, we are seeing gas chambers being erected. In one state, Arizona, Zyklon B is offered. Zyklon B was the gas used in Auschwitz. These are facts that I'm not making up. These are facts that are real. And we cannot forget the past. And that is why I say that the death penalty condemns the society that enacts it infinitely more than any individual that it condemns to death.
So, Cantor Zussman, you mentioned the case, of course, of Adolf Eichmann, and you said that Martin Buber, a very famous Jewish philosopher, condemned the decision by Israel to execute him, calling it a great mistake. Eichmann, of course, during the trial, attempted to disavow his responsibility or minimally to diminish the role that he played in the Holocaust. So I want to ask you about the intention and the response of the perpetrator in attacks of this kind, what happened at the Tree of Life, because what people have pointed out, what's shocking, is that Bowers, rather than express any guilt at all, on the contrary, said that he should have been better prepared, had more ammunition so he could kill more Jews, etc. So to what extent should that be taken into account, if at all?
I think it should absolutely be taken into account, again, to the fullest extent of the law, to reflect the absolutely heinous and horrific nature of it. The problem, again, is not that we did not punish him to the full extent of the law. The problem is that the law is wrong in offering this inhumane punishment, which 70% of nations in the world, 70% have recognized as a violation of human rights, including Ghana, the country of Ghana, which just this past week abolished the death penalty while this trial was going on. And while this trial, while this this verdict came out this week in the United States, we have two executions, one of a mentally ill man on Tuesday, and another today of a quote-unquote volunteer for state-assisted suicide in Florida, a prisoner who is dropped all his appeals. So when you open that door to death, that is opening Pandora's box to something that we know is a violation of the highest order of human rights. And it opens the door to proposals that we see in the states here for the death penalty now for abortion, and countries like Uganda that are now have the quote-unquote kill the gays law, the death penalty for homosexual acts. And it goes on and on. Florida, we see this Pandora's box opening now for the death penalty for crimes that don't involve killing, and for the death penalty when there's a non-unanimous jury. So what we're seeing is, again and again, how when that door is left open, horrors emanate from it.
Cantor Zussman, I wanted to go to Democratic Congressmember Jamie Raskin, who shared his response to the death sentence given to Bowers in an interview with the BBC.
I have opposed the death penalty for a long time, and I led the fight in Maryland to abolish the death penalty. You know, I think that the punishment of death is certainly way too good for the mass murderer, this racist anti-Semite who assassinated worshipers at the Tree of Life synagogue. And, you know, he should be forced to endure his days with the rigors of a hard time in prison. And he should be an example to others. You know, a lot of these people who engage in these massacres at churches, supermarkets, Walmarts, what have you, turn the gun on themselves and kill themselves. They don't want to face a guilty verdict and life in prison.
I wanted to ask you, Cantor Zussman, people may not be aware that in death penalty cases, something we pointed out at the beginning, the prospective jurors have to be for the death penalty, even if in the end they don't give the death penalty to the person. That often excludes blacks, Jews, and Catholics, who are more often than not against the death penalty. So then they won't serve on jurors in a case that doesn't even necessarily go for the death penalty. And it also shows that those jurors would be less likely to convict those that would be kept off the jury. Your thoughts on that?
I think that's absolutely spot on. I saw a comment just recently that somebody made, an astute comment, that hypothetically, if all the members of the jury were Jewish, it's highly unlikely that we would see this penalty of death. And that would reflect the cross-section of the Jewish community when it comes to views on the death penalty. Let it be known that, indeed, there are many in the Jewish community, as you've mentioned before, who do support the death penalty. There's a famous quip that two Jews, three opinions, and we are allowed to agree to disagree. In the Talmud, there's a famous phrase, teku, which comes from the Aramaic tekum, which means let it stand. It's okay, we will agree for the sake of heaven to disagree on this issue. And that's fine. Let there begin a group that says Jews for the death penalty, lamavet, which means to death. Ours is lechayim, to life, Jews against the death penalty. And so that would, to me, say that if there were jurors who were selected, you would at least get at least one, if not many more, who would have recognized that the death penalty is an abomination and would not have voted for it for Robert Bowers.
Cantor Michael Zussman, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Usually we go to a recorded music break, but we're wondering if you could be that for us today. We're trying something new. If you could take out this segment with a memorial prayer as the all the country looks at Pittsburgh and the greatest anti-Semitic act in U.S. history. Cantor Michael Zusman, let me say, is a former prison chaplain and co-founder of L'Chaim.